At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's installment of Washington Post Story Mode, the show where we discuss the biggest video game news of the week, every week. I'm with Washington Post video game reporter Nathan Grayson, and today we are talking about Twitch streamers covering Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In order to do that, I am joined by a guest, Lance from The Serfs.
Hi, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to apologize in advance for my terrible voice. I'm just on the tail end of recovering from COVID, but I'm doing much better. So it's a pleasure.
Now, I've heard that COVID is, and I quote, bad.
It's not great. That's how I put it. But I would definitely recommend everyone get vaccinated, because my experience was only a couple of days and I didn't need to go to a hospital or get Dr. Joe Rogan to get me the kitchen sink or some ivermectin or that horse strip that everyone's talking so much about. I didn't really need any external things outside of a healthy dose of Dayquil and NyQuil in moderation or in excess.
Yeah, you know, whichever works for you. But yeah, I mean, that is very good to hear. And yeah, I mean, you know, the stuff clearly works. There are statistics that back up the fact that people who are vaccinated suffer from symptoms that are not as bad. And I think maybe more importantly, don't die.
Yeah, that one's
at least
that,
they do
that
not
one's
die
nice.
With a great frequency.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, so like I obviously brought you on today to talk about kind of what it's been like as somebody who streams on Twitch to kind of, you know, cover and address the events unfolding in Ukraine, which are obviously, you know, very terrible and tragic and, you know, unnecessary. And so, yeah, I just wanted to sort of talk to you about your approach to doing that and like kind of how you view yourself in the grander scheme of media that is, you know, kind of all focused on this right now. So I guess to kind of begin, like in terms of, you know, when you cover these topics on stream, what are sort of your goals of your coverage? Like, are you trying to give a kind of well-rounded view of what's going on? Or do you have more specific goals around, like, for example, countering mainstream narratives, countering misinformation? Does it vary like broadcast to broadcast? Kind of how do you approach it?
Well, I would say that I have pretty extreme delusions of grandeur, and so that I've come to terms with that. I am now pretty much the only source one should trust, and so hopefully everyone who's watching me. No, I mean the only reason I want to make the only reason I want to make a joke about that is that it seems like it's pretty surreal in the modern age that a whole bunch of people who, like 2 weeks ago, I was talking pretty consistently about truckers in Canada and, you know, the far right radicalization aspects of that, and then reacting to silly videos. And then all of a sudden, I'm not alone in this. And then every single person who was doing that next week is expected to become Walter Cronkite. You know, like the stakes might be that high. Personally, for me, in terms of how I've approached it, is that I've been trying to humble myself on a regular basis because, you know, streamers at the end of the day, people are watching you, I think, to be able to get the newest version of information. And it seems like every single time something cataclysmic is occurring, there is a online mass panic that also goes along with it. I could point towards the events that happened at the nuclear power plant last week, and I was getting You know, a lot of people immediately, you know, posting me links and things and talking about how we're on the verge of a full-on 10 times worse than Fukushima event and this is that. And one of the first things I had noticed when that was happening was that it didn't seem at all that the reactor itself had been struck. Not that I'm trying to downplay the severity of what was going on. It was an absolutely horrifying moment in history and one that should be avoided at all costs. But I noticed that a lot of people were already talking about this as if the nuclear reactor itself was on fire or they had somehow penetrated through the layers and layers of concrete that protects that barrier. And very few people online were trying to push the message that was, this is an administrative building that's on fire near it. This is not a good situation, but this is certainly not, we are on the verge of kind of like a nuclear meltdown. And that was, I guess, a very big moment that that I think a lot of streamers who are covering it at the same time kind of have to recognize that, like, if you give way to, I suppose, the online panic in real time, as a lot of people tend to do because these events are so scary and they're happening so quickly, then you're most likely going to make the situation infinitely worse. So when I say it's been humbling, to say the very least. I've been trying to come out as often as possible and be like, you know, I've gotten a lot of things wrong on this. It's probably my time to learn when it comes to a lot of these topics. And I'll usually watch a lot of content in legacy media and also, like, you know, documentaries that I trust to try and learn more about it rather than just do the typical, like, you know, react Andy. I see an event and I tell you, okay, now here's what happened and here's what's going to happen next kind of thing. Because, like, I think anyone who tells you on a regular basis they know what's going to happen next has no clue.
Right, right, of course. Well, yeah, and so, like, with that in mind, how do you sort of approach, like, balancing those things? Because you were talking about, you know, people coming to streams to get, like, the latest version of information. But when you're doing that, like, I can't imagine that it's easy to vet the information you get. You can do other forms of vetting. Like, for example, you're saying you can watch other sources. You can, like, you know, get better context. But, like, when something brand new, like, arrives on your doorstep, how do you say, like, okay, this is worth surfacing versus, like, oh, maybe this is a little bit, you know, dodgier?
Usually before, I'd make an affirmative statement as in X is happening, I'd want it to be verified in some form or another by legacy media, right? Like, before I'd say, like, okay, this is now taking place, I'd want to see, like, you know, it being reported, somewhere, whether that's, you know, BBC or Al Jazeera, it doesn't matter. And at which point I can be like, okay, so now we can start to approach it from that standpoint. And also to try and avoid people inundating you with just Twitter links, because there is obviously Twitter links that can be verified Twitter links, but even, you know, no one is above this. Everyone is getting things wrong in a regular basis. You have to kind of be like an online vetting machine. And then and then combine that with the fact that there is a surplus of trolls right now popping up in streamers' chat on a regular basis with just the most hyperbolic statements. You know, like, some people have said that people have popped in their chat straight up being like, you know, Russia has launched nukes, and then, like, you know, with all exclamation points, and then just, like, spamming that for a while or things to that effect. And then obviously, you know, for whatever reason, they're either trying to get a reaction out of everyone or
also
out of the streamer.
Simultaneously casting it to his Twitch. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, as well.
But yeah, when you have that going on, like, when there are people saying all of this ridiculous stuff in your chat and everything, like, what do you even, like, again, how do you, like, avoid doing the whole, how do you keep a straight face at that point, especially when it's, like, something where you're like, okay, this could be true, I need to vet it, but also, like, you know, it could be not true and it could just be ridiculous. Like, how do you sort of, like, because at the same time you're also having to, like, you know, entertain people, talk to people, like, continue your stream. Like, how do you balance all or juggle all of these different things?
Well, I should start by saying I'm not a gold standard for any of this. I mean, like everyone else, I've made so many mistakes. I was one of the people pushing really hard against the fact that I even thought this was going to take place when it was first starting out, just because of, I guess, my hesitancy to trust, you know, state intel and stuff like that from coming out of the US. So I think one of the bigger things would probably be recognizing a lot of the shortcomings that you have just as a React streamer. I mean, I have to stress this a lot. None of us are, like, have doctorates in geopolitics, you know, and like I said, a couple of weeks ago, I was laughing in real time at Tim Pool getting everything wrong about the Canadian trucker rally. And then it goes from that mm-hmm. to something where the stakes are so very high, especially in the way people react to it. I think for me, obviously, before going forward with like I can go back to that nuclear power plant event that took place before it was being reported wildly in legacy media. There was obviously a lot of Twitter accounts that were sounding the alarm bells, saying this was really, really bad. And then I noticed a lot of streamers weren't, and this is credit to them, weren't going as far as saying like this event is taking place like in real time. They were waiting to see what other sources said. So, I mean, for all the mm-hmm. the shitting that people do on legacy media,
you're not right.
Sorry?
No, don't. Okay, keep talking. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, for all the shitting people do in legacy media on a repeated basis, like, you know, the mainstream media is all fake news and stuff like that, I think streamers should also recognize that, like, we're all editorial pieces, every single one mm-hmm. of us, right? We're not journalists. We're entertainers on the internet. That's what we do. You know, like, half the time, you know, when we're not reporting on this kind of stuff, we're making, you know, poop and pee jokes and stuff like that. So if it were not for the work of actual real journalists who cover this kind of stuff, and even, you know, the bravest of the brave, the ones who are, like, on the ground floor and going mm-hmm. to those locations, streamers would be nothing but just, you're looking at one individual's ability to editorialize in real time. That's really, really what it comes down to.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, like, when you sort of address this, because this is kind of a thing where I think there's a really hard balance to strike, right? Because I think that on some level, you want to present yourself as authoritative, because then people will come to your stream for information in these times. And, like, you know, if you start your stream by saying, like, hey, everybody, ignore me, then people are probably not going to watch you. But at the same time, you still need to convey, like, hey, I'm just a person. Like, there are other authorities out there, or there are other sources that might have, like, info that is, you know, more concrete than what I can present. And so how do you couch that when you're addressing audiences about this? How do you sort of walk that line such that people understand where you're coming from and, like, the sort of, you know, again, position that you occupy amongst all of these other media sources they could be drawing on?
I would say, just on a repeated basis, to acknowledge what exactly you are. And in my mm-hmm. case, you know, I'm an entertainer on the internet. I hope people walk away from my streams, not just entertained, but obviously educated on a topic, right? So I do think there's a responsibility to do due diligence and that kind of stuff when you're talking about these kind of things. But you know, I don't have any delusions of grandeur about this. I think transparency would be the big thing. Just to be completely clear out of the gates that, like, again, what you're witnessing, if you watch me live covering this event, is you're watching someone editorializing based on their own biases and opinions as quickly as possible in real time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of, in chat, Imp Grievous just asked, I've heard streamers talk about chat as helping to validate information, and also chat as a vector for misinformation. How do you balance that?
I think anyone who's got a large, viewer base knows that they're probably going to have a lot of people whom they recognize in terms of, like, names and trust. So there are certain people who, you know, when they send in a link, if it's someone I've never seen before in the chat, obviously I'm going to be a little bit more dubious about whether I should even, like, put it up on screen first before, like, vetting it. But I usually try to tell them the same thing that I hope they expect from me, which is that, like, verify your sources. If it's, you know, Ukraine 420 Big Chungus at whatever on Twitter, and they've made some huge statement with just, like, a little JPEG or something, could not be the most verified source. So then mm-hmm. if you found out a piece of news from that, go check to see if it's being echoed anywhere else. Check out if you are seeing that in you know, legacy media or prominent and verified sources. Are they tweeting about it as well? And then if they are, is there an article about it before just going right into full panic mode all the time? Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, yeah, and I mean, like, the, you know, ideally in those situations, you get things right and you've reported a good piece of information and, you know, people do with that what they will. But in the instances where you don't, where you make a mistake, how do you handle that?
Hopefully the mistake wasn't too much of a big fuck up, to say the least. We've all done it, myself included. Maybe not as much related to this, but I have in the past. I guess don't let the ego that comes along with being a streamer try and cloud your ability to admit your limitations. That would probably be it. And just be forthwith, you know, where it's like, hey, by the way, I not only was mocking the U.S. intel about an imminent invasion of Ukraine by Russia. I was making memes about it because of, you know, my history.
Got a tier one subscription.
Sorry about that. That's that's my notification things. I'll turn those off. And thank you, Joe Spinner. Sorry, I not only was mocking their information about that, but I was making memes about it. And that was just because, you know, I was protesting during the Iraq war before it took place. And I was inundated with the amount of, U.S. information that was coming up in that period, which a lot of it turned out to be falsifiable related to WMDs, DLK uranium, all this kind of stuff. And then I was like, oh, are we now going to believe the U.S. intel once again, which seems to almost sounding war drums towards an event that no one wants, right? Obviously, no one would want Russia to invade Ukraine. And then as it continued to happen, they gave us like hardline dates, like the 16th, and then nothing happened on the 16th. And then once again, it was just like, well, it just seems like the U.S. is really trying to propagate consistently this narrative that is, in my opinion, not going to be true. And when it turned out to be true, that was a huge moment where I think a lot of people who had been saying that, especially myself, for so long, had to take a step back and be like, you know, I was wrong. I was completely wrong about this. And all I can do is both apologize and hope to get better in the future. Because again, streamers aren't journalists. They are opinion pieces. And unlike opinion pieces and pundits on Fox News, we're pundits without any editorial staff. Our editorial staff is our chat, basically. It's the people who are watching you and who are going to be like either outraged, and hopefully you listen to them. Like, hopefully you listen to, you know, hundreds of people who are like, shut the fuck up. What are you talking about? You're so wrong on this. But outside of that, like, even Fox News has, an editorial staff that'll prevent, hopefully, Sean Hannity from saying something a little too beyond the pale. So there'd be that aspect as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's one of these things, though, where, like, I think that there are, in that regard, you know, you're definitely vulnerable to, like, you know, making mistakes and things like that. But at the same time, I think that from, you know, major media, there's an expectation, especially given that they have teams and things like that, to be almost infallible, or at least to never get it wrong in this way where, like, I think that they're like, it's a double-sided coin, but like, one of the problems with that is that, you know, there can be almost too much trust in institutions that ultimately do have like agendas, or that are run by people. They are ultimately fallible. And I think that, like, maybe one of the upsides that streamers have, despite the fact that they don't have maybe teams vetting their information, is that they can be wrong and be like, yep, I got it wrong. I am a human being. And also, like, you know, in doing so, you can serve as evidence that even people who seem authoritative aren't necessarily going to nail it all of the time. And especially in an instance like this, where there are just a lot of things that nobody really knows, that, like, you shouldn't just put all of your trust in one single individual or one network or whatever, because, you know, everyone's trying to make sense of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are a handful of streamers that I'm not going to, start drama or tea on your, lovely fundraiser here, but there are a handful of streamers who are
small amount of tea, is it?
who are pushing, basically like RT, Russia Today talking points on a mainstream platform like Twitch. And there are partnered streamers who are doing that. And they are, regurgitating a lot of points that I would, myself, feel are just ultimately incredibly falsifiable. Some of them going as far as like QAnon-esque conspiracy theories. So, There's certainly, like, in terms of the editorializing being done by Twitch in regards to political streamers talking on this issue, there hasn't really seemed to be a large push from Twitch in terms of what their, meters are, or what their barometer is. Like, I can't really get a sense for what stance they're trying to take. I think they're trying to, you know, allow for as much freedom of thought, freedom of speech as possible. While at the same time, I'm sure there's going to be limits to that, ultimately, as things continue to accelerate.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, like, did you see Twitch, like, update their misinformation policy last week?
No. How did they alter it?
Oh, okay.
Because they've always had a very strong, like, I was trying to tell someone not too long ago that, like, you technically aren't allowed to present any false information on Twitch, like, just as a hardline rule. If you look at the, like, not just the TOS, but the very, in the TOS where they, there's all these different chapters you can click on, like, their views on, sexual impropriety, their views on violence, their views on this. In the very first one, you're not supposed to present any false information. It's like, very clearly worded. Which all of us do, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that's unavoidable. But yeah, so basically, like, their new policy, here, I will scroll to the part of my article that states it so I can just quote it instead of butchering it. let's see. Okay, so their new policy prohibits, and this is a quote, individuals or propaganda entities whose online presence is dedicated to disseminating misinformation with clear risks of real world harm. But it leaves room for, and this is another quote, one-off statements containing misinformation.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's interesting that you talk about people kind of, you know, propagating what are essentially like RT talking points, because it's like that sort of like raises the question of where is the line? At what point do you become in Twitch's eyes, basically like a propaganda entity or someone whose online presence is quote unquote dedicated to disseminating misinformation versus being someone who, like, the statements you're making, even if they tie in with these talking points, could be considered one-off relative to your larger body of work.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny you'd say that. I just had someone pop in my chat saying, "Hail Putin," and then saying it over and over, and now they're just spamming the chat with it. So there you are. For. Oh, we're actually... Oh, okay, sorry. No, I'm getting... what are they called? A hate raid or whatever, because there's like six or seven different accounts that are all spamming the same stuff right now. Hey, it's happening in real time. If you ever wanted to see a hate raid take place in real time, it's happening in my Twitch chat. And big thank you to the mods who are now furiously deleting people's accounts.
yeah, hats off to the mods. Not an easy job, especially when that kind of a thing is going down. But yeah, no, like it is really interesting, though, because Twitch, you know, again, they roll out these policies and policies are written to sound unilateral. But then things like what you are describing can still happen on the platform. And because the language around these policies is so vague, you can make a case that they're like, well, that doesn't fall under the policy. Like, I mean, their accounts previously had not been dedicated to that level of misinformation or disinformation. So, you know, they get a pass. Or like, again, a particular streamer, yeah, historically they've talked about other things, so they get a pass. Or like, they mix in these kind of Russia talking points with other things. So, you know, who can really say?
Yeah.
And at that point, like, yeah. I mean, do you think that broadly Twitch does a good job containing this stuff? Or do you think that they sort of, you know, I think relative to even YouTube or whatever, have kind of gotten lucky in regards to people either using or not using their platform to spread misinformation around major political events?
I think Twitch operates the same way that YouTube does, in that while they have a TOS and they have a clear guideline in how everything should be enforced, there isn't really any transparency as to, you know, a case by case basis why this has happened or why that has happened. I've been specifically banned for reasons where they'd give me a 30-day ban, and then when I would reply or, you know, appeal the ban with saying something like, I thought I was doing the same thing that like a lot of other streamers were doing without naming names, they then reduced it to a 7-day ban right after that, right? But without any explanation as to why. I tried asking then afterwards, can you give me clarification as to why me saying this resulted in the less, you know, amount of days that I have it, but there's nothing in that regard to letting me know. But that's pretty much how giant tech companies operate, right, in terms of enforcing their TOS. I don't know if they've been tested like this in recent memory, where right now it is a platform where a lot of people are turning to for a variety of reasons, not just to get the newest news, but because obviously in a time where a lot of people might be afraid, or at a time when a lot of people might feel isolated, either by the pandemic or just the world around them, there is a kind of like a cozy sense of being in an online community, especially if you're like watching one of your favorite streamers, you're getting to hang out with a lot of other people who you like and chat and stuff like that. So you might have more people turning to Twitch, not just for the newest news, but just to feel a little bit more safe in amongst everything that's happening.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I also, earlier this week, I reported on US and European sanctions hitting Twitch streamers in Russia. And they were also saying basically that, like, even though, you know, they can no longer make money off of Twitch, because basically all their payment options have been taken away, that they're going to keep streaming, in part because, like, as you're saying, it kind of like it keeps them sane, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, things are bad. I mean, much more so in Ukraine than in Russia, but nonetheless, things are pretty bad for Russian citizens at this point too.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah, you know, if you've got a community of people who at the very least are saying like, hey, we care about you, and checking in on you and all of this stuff, then that's something, right? And it can be, as you're saying, like also kind of a distraction from everything else, if your stream doesn't just focus on like world events. One of the Russian streamers I talked to, yeah, he was like, I'm going to continue to stream. I do believe in these hard times, a lot of people need a distraction from all the world events, and I keep a pretty like comfy non-political broadcast.
Yeah,
I mean, like, that just seems, you know, like one of these things that maybe people don't immediately think about when it comes to Twitch in relation to major conflicts is like, you know, there's the obvious element of people talking about those conflicts on Twitch and reporting on them to some degree. But then there's also just like the need to be, you know, for a little bit, at least, to be separate from it, not necessarily to ignore it, because I don't think that's a good thing for people to be doing when the stakes are this high and when people are suffering, but just to, you know, take a breather, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there, because I think there has been a lot of prominent Russian streamers and YouTubers. I don't know if I can swear on your show, so I'll just say no. F words is one of the biggest YouTube
good streamers. Policy. We generally try to avoid swearing. So
okay,
thank you.
Sure. I didn't know because I swear quite a bit on my show.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
Okay. But anyways,
I don't personally care.
No F word is the name of a really prominent Russian streamer who has been obviously an outspoken, he's very against the war. He's, you know, against Putin's policies as much as you can be as someone who, you know, directly lives in Russia, all that kind of stuff. And he's been very consistent in his messaging on both those subjects. And at the same time is obviously now cut off from any form of being able to get paid for what he does in Russia, as well as, you know, that I was reading your article. And yes, there's a number of Twitch streamers who are in the same boat. And I don't know if anyone was really expecting to see as rapidly as it took place, not just sanctions coming from countries themselves, but coming from corporations. Like the corporate sanctions have ramped up so rapidly and so quickly that I think that was something that no one could have either predicted or understood what the ramifications were going to be as they were taking place faster and faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really has. And it's one of these things where, and I'm curious about how, like, on your stream you discuss sanctions, because I think that, like, you know, the goal, obviously, of sanctions is to prevent a more active armed conflict between countries like the U.S. and Russia. But at the same time, like, historically, sanctions, you know, the impact of them in other countries have been mixed. And generally speaking, when we're talking about matters of class, they impact, you know, the lower class and people who are already vulnerable. And then, like, in a country like Russia, for example, which has a very calcified upper class, has leadership, and then also oligarchs, like, those people are pretty insulated from these impacts. And so it's like, you know, I guess, like, when you're talking about this, what kind of context do you give on that front? And, like, how do you sort of depict the fact that these sanctions are having impacts on, you know, real and often normal people, many of whom oppose the war?
Yeah, of course. Well, that's pretty much usually been my messaging, is that sanctions affect, you know, the regular populace the worst. And I in no way would want to advocate for something that is going to result in, obviously, you know, mass starvation of potentially millions of people as a result of, you know, economic sanctions being done. There's absolutely no control, I suppose, you could have as a citizen over what corporate sanctions are going to be or what, you know, form they're going to take. As opposed to, you know, the sanctions of your government in that mm-hmm. case. I think what is being done right now is there is a form of economic warfare that is being employed to try and continue pressure towards the administration of Vladimir Putin in order to either de-escalate or to end the invasion. Whether or not that is actually going to have the effect that everyone is hoping for, or if it's going to create a situation in which now the price of oil is incredibly valuable, the ability for Russian oligarchs who would stand to make the most money from perhaps the potential sale of oil to new markets or different markets because they're being cut off from existing ones, are they going to be directly as affected as everyone else, such as just regular Russian citizens? Is it going to achieve the effect that you're looking for, or is it going to effectively cause mass starvation? Which, of course, is not something that you want. I would be a complete, you know, a joke of a person if I tried to say that I understand more about the implications of economic sanctions than people who, you know worlds more about this topic than I do. Obviously, what I'm, what I talk about when I do reporting on this is, you know, this is what I've been, you know, studying and reading from a variety of literature, usually from a leftist perspective, usually coming at it from, you know, other people whom I trust on this topic or news sources like Democracy Now! And stuff like that. But yeah, it seems to be somewhat uncharted territory in that, you know, the financial collapse of the ruble that is happening so quickly in real time, what effect is that going to have? Is it going to be a situation in which, you know, a despotic leader like Vladimir Putin, is he going to cave to external pressure? Is he going to cave to global pressure? Is the, like, there's a lot of things that I never expected to happen that are happening right now, such as, you know, the UN resolution vote, seeing the amount of countries that normally would be hardline allies of Russia abstaining in their decision on that vote. That is something I didn't expect to see, where we're seeing China take a very neutral position in this, rather than one that is directly backing Russia, right? And saying that they too want to see a de-escalation of violence that is taking place in Ukraine. So again, I don't know what this all would be leading towards. Obviously, you know, I think Chelsea Manning put it really well. There's no good outcome, but there's less horrible ones. And I guess we want to steer towards the less horrible outcomes, ideally.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, but I mean, there are a lot of interesting things that you mentioned in there. And yeah, one of them that I think is worth kind of touching on is that, again, as you were saying, like, you are able to acknowledge that you don't know as much as some people. And additionally, like, I think you're able to acknowledge, in a way, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of just like streamers being individual people, not having to adhere to kind of the way that major networks portray themselves, which is like above everything, both in terms of like level of knowledge and in terms of like a lack of biases, that, you know, you're able to acknowledge what your sources are, which are often like, you know, left-leaning or leftist in nature.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, like, do you think that appeals more to, I especially to like kind of, you know, younger people who are coming up on sort of influencer culture and stuff like that, that they like to know who exactly is telling them, you know, what's going on in the world and also where that person is coming from, what their sort of, what informs their viewpoints.
And sorry, how does, what is your question related to that?
Do you think that do you think that that kind of approach appeals more to like kind of the more current younger generation than maybe like a network broadcast style approach of like a CNN or whatever does, simply because you know, you're able to actually wear your biases on your sleeve, which is not an intrinsically bad thing in my mind.
I don't know, because a lot of the times when we pull my audience, they don't skew 100% towards Zoomers. Like, there's obviously younger members of the audience, but it's usually in the higher 20s to early 30s, in terms of people who watch me.
I will give you some demographic information, actually.
Oh, okay, here we go.
By the standards of legacy media, that is still extremely young.
Oh, okay.
It's really funny because, like, to the internet, I'm a boomer.
Right.
I'm in my early 30s.
Yeah, me
30s,
too. Me too.
So I'm in my late 30s. I'm a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. But to legacy media, we are like infants. We are babies. I will say that, let's see, because I'm not sure if I can actually share this information, I'll obscure it some. I will say that a certain legacy publication that I know quite well, like the average readership age is like above 50. So anything below that is considered young.
Oh, gotcha.
So, anyway, just some fun information there.
Okay, so my audience does skew younger. I suppose, yes. I think there was a big interest and a surging interest in leftist ideas post the first political run of Bernie Sanders that I think has grown over time. But all that being said, looking at polling in my country, in Canada, for example, I have been astonished to see how ready citizens in this country are for things like enacting a no-fly zone. I don't know if that's because they don't understand the repercussions of what a no-fly zone is. I don't know if they if they don't understand what that would mean, which would effectively be leading, the U.S. And NATO allies into a direct conflict, a military escalation with Russia, something that I think everyone should be on the same page as the thing we want to avoid, which is what I would assume. But when I see polling in this country, Canadians, even if it shows how the question was asked, seem to be overwhelmingly in favor of a no-fly zone. And I cannot for the life of me understand why. It could be either A, they're not entirely sure of the repercussions of what that would mean, or B, they are seeing just the horrors and the devastation that is happening to Ukraine, and they feel helpless. And as a result of feeling helpless, they feel like, isn't this something we can do? Isn't there something we can do to stop this, now, right? So that's why one of the things I'm also trying to reinforce in my messaging is just to get people to understand what the implications of that would be, and to try and prevent that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because that's very interesting to me, because I've seen a lot of streamers on Twitch talk about the idea of a no-fly zone. And I think that across the board, they've pretty consistently emphasized what it would mean more broadly, which is what you're saying, an actual direct conflict. And I think that in maybe more traditional news media, the tendency has been to use the phrase, but to contextualize it a little bit less. I mean, I've seen like, let's see, I think that there was like a MSNBC segment or something the other day where like they really went into it. They brought on somebody who was like very much of the stance of like, if we do this, there will be a conflict. It could be really, really bad.
Yeah.
But I think more broadly, people hear that term and it just sounds like a set of rules, right? Like it's just like, oh yeah, we just like say this thing and then they'll be like, okay, that like in addition to sanctions, now we're going to back off. But it's like, no, to have a no-fly zone, you've got to enforce it, right?
Yes. Yeah, and like, it's not a name
I think maybe
only.
The part of the message that doesn't get across is what that enforcement would mean.
Yeah, that could be the aspect of it. I mean, even worse than that, I've seen so many, and I don't want to, alienate any of your listeners, but like blue checkmark liberals do this kind of like, nuclear war would be very bad, but.
Right.
And that but is always where I'm just aghast. I am like, in what way do you think there can be some kind of, let's just say, measured nuclear response or measured tactical nuclear deployment? Like this, these aren't the kind of war game. I don't know. Part of me worries sometimes, maybe it has something to do with people getting the source of their information on nuclear proliferation from Fallout. Or something to that effect. I'm not entirely sure.
Also, are they paying attention to what Fallout's about?
Yeah, I know.
The world's looking pretty bad.
Yeah, it's not the ideal future, to say the least. But yeah, no, it genuinely disturbs me to see that. I think that should be the kind of life-ending event that everyone wants to avoid at all costs.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to go into the media angle of it for a second, I think also like, and you know, I'm always hesitant to ascribe anything like solely to media portrayals, because I think that's overstated. I think like, you know, that kind of argument ultimately leads you to like video games cause violence. And I think that's kind of a ridiculous argument to make on space.
It's absurd.
But I do think that like media narratives are more subtle in the ways that they inform how we might think. And I think that a pervasive kind of like point of view represented in media, at least where it concerns, you know, apocalypses and whatever, is the one of, you know, the survivor. And I think that because that's always the perspective character, I think that a lot of people maybe have a tendency unconsciously, not necessarily like saying these words in their head, but thinking like, I'm going to be that person. Mm-hmm. That's going to be me. So like, yeah, maybe it'll be bad for everyone else, but I'll figure it out. I'll you know, use my hard scrabble attitude to pull me through it all. And
my
prepper
buckets.
Go hunt in the wastelands.
Yeah. I want to be perfectly clear. I don't buy into the narrative at all that I think, you know, violent video games or, you know, sexualized video games or any of that negatively impacts kids. I think that's, you know, been absurd for a very long time. What I feel more is that I think there hasn't really been a lot of mainstream education on the subject of what exactly nuclear war entails, what exactly nuclear bombs are, how do they interact with the environment, what fallout is, what the actual devastation and effects will be, and how it is pretty much a zero end game. There is not a tactical, you know, measured nuclear war between two superpowers. It is like of the utmost importance that is avoided at all costs. But I agree with you in a sense that I think some people, because I remember when basalts were being accused of turning people into zombies. And I know this sounds like a really weird tangent, but I remember when that was out of the news, I had a lot of people who I was friends with on Facebook who were very excited because they thought this was the start of the zombie movie. And they were all holy shit, it's happening. This is so cool. And I was like, what about zombie movies has ever made you think this is something I want to be in? But they were just like, I don't know. It's just like everything resets to zero, you know, and it's no longer about all these systems and empires and governments. Mm-hmm. We all just have to get to our nearest like Costco and then grab our, you know, our shotguns and we're going to be the heroes of that era. And so maybe it's that kind of romanticization of it, maybe that leads a little bit people into thinking this could be something for me, a new future, a reset.
Yeah, which is like really grim, right? Because it speaks to, I think, you know, the way that our society has evolved, that things are so dire for people that they look at like their current present existence and then they look at one that is like A, wholly unknown, and B, like likely just devastating, and they're like, I picked that one.
Yeah,
that one seems better. Like
of them all. Well, you know, with preppers, apparently there's this actual like a psychological evaluation of that kind of mindset where they feel in the future they will have advantages they don't have in everyday life because they are the only ones who are going to have the resources, the materials, the shelters, and the prepper buckets, and they may be the new emperors and lords of some, you know, dystopian future.
Right. Which, I mean, again, is a very like, you know, it's a very capitalistic mentality, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's just like you're hoarding a different kind of wealth at that point. You're hoarding what will be the presumed wealth of the future as opposed to the current wealth of now. Though a lot of people who are preppers are often have a fair amount of money. So they're hoarding in the present tense as well. But I mean, in any case, it's certainly a very, to me, sad mentality to embrace. That said, that's also like, I think another side of maybe covering something that comes up covering all of this that comes up less on kind of mainstream networks, which is the more environmental angle, right? I've seen some streamers on Twitch, for example, advocate for like, okay, if we want to end this conflict, or rather at least like kind of take away Russia's power in the future of conflicts like this, because this is probably not going anywhere, no matter how this resolves, would be to, you know, like divest from oil and gas and like immediately double down on, you know, sources of green energy and turn that into something that is pervasive across the country. Is that something that you've talked about in your broadcasts?
Yeah, and it's something I still advocate for. I would recommend a new article by Naomi Klein in The Intercept, where she really kind of ties all these things together and puts the focus on oil and energy and how, rather than, because this is all taking place when we just got that new climate report, which of course is always just like, things are so much worse than we originally thought.
Every time.
But in amongst everything else, it could be a golden opportunity for humanity, especially countries that are now situating themselves in opposition to Russia and their dependence perhaps on oil from other sources, to look towards migrating towards greener sources of energy, and even controversial greener sources of energy like nuclear power or things like that, right? Which I know is a hot topic for a lot of people, but we don't have a lot of time left and we don't have a lot of options. And if right now the geopolitics of oil is consistently bringing us into, global events and the economics of it all is making us either more or less dependent on what was previously considered the axis of evil, which now is becoming the axis of convenience, it seems. The once enemies of the United States like Iran and Venezuela are now going to be welcomed as besties if they can provide us with alternative energy sources. It would also be a time, yes, I completely advocate for moving towards greener energy and less reliance on fossil fuels.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of these things where, like, you know, I see this mentality kind of expressed a lot in certain circles, many of them like left-leaning, and then often from like streamers on Twitch, but it still feels like that idea, at least in terms of like kind of penetrating upwards into more mainstream outlets, into sort of the things that like my parents would watch, like there sort of seems to be a cutoff that I think might be born of, for example, just people who have a lot of power and influence being like, well, if we did that, we'd have to change everything. That would require a massive scale overhaul. That would mean a lot of people who currently make a lot of money off of the present system would make less money. And so like when you advocate for these things, right? Because you were talking about, and I don't disagree with you, that like we don't have a ton of time left. Just looking at these reports, it is laid pretty bare. I mean, like, how do you maintain, you know, kind of a sense of hope that this might occur?
Drugs. To be fair, okay, so if you're going to talk about things like de-escalation, I think one of the things that a lot of people kind of gloss over when it comes to the Green New Deal, and sorry, my voice is cracking a bit right now, but
no, okay.
When it comes to that, is that it cannot exist in and of simply this kind of fairy tale that we just switch over, like we flip a light switch and then we move from fossil fuels to clean energy. There are tens of thousands of jobs at stake, and in no way do I think that tens of thousands of workers who are working in coal mines, who are working in energy that may be considered not part of future tech, should suddenly all lose their jobs en masse. And so we have just swaths of unemployed Canadians and unemployed Americans either working in the tar sands or working in fracking who suddenly don't have an opportunity. There should be provisions implemented by the government in order to be able to have training programs for people who want to leave those industries and allow them to transition into greener jobs. And that has to be part of the assumed cost. Mixed in with, I think you have to have brave politicians who are willing to stop subsidizing oil and gas companies, just full stop. And in certain cases in Canada, I would advocate for things like nationalizing the oil and gas industry specifically, because it used to be nationalized in this country. And ever since it's become privatized, the expansion of extraction and in more dangerous forms of extraction in this country, such as the tar sands, which is just one of the worst ways you can possibly extract bitumen from the earth, my God, have become more proliferated, which is obviously a massive problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, so getting kind of back on the topic of, I guess, like coverage on Twitch, and you said your voice is kind of bothering you, so I don't want to keep you for too much longer because I don't want you to, you know, not be able to talk tomorrow. That would be unfortunate.
I can answer one very salient question. Just make it really good.
All right. I'm not sure if this is my best question necessarily, but I think it is pertinent to everything else we've discussed. So it kind of puts a bow on it. I think that there are at least some people I've noticed, like, you know, as you're saying, there are a lot of people who are like consistent in your chat or in the chat of other streamers, particularly like people like Hassan. And it seems like they're probably using Twitch as their main news source here. Or if not that, then at least like a very supplementary news source that kind of allows them to, you know, it basically curates the news for them, right? Like, because there's so much happening and there's so many different sources of information coming at them, they're like, okay, well, a streamer can at least help me make sense of this. I mean, like, more broadly, how do you feel about A, that development, the fact that people are doing that at all? And then B, how do you feel about the responsibility you personally have as a result of that?
I think the interaction of Twitch is what makes it unique. and what makes the experience different from any other form of media that came before it. Whereas, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, I'm a very small streamer. If you're going to mention Hassan, we're in different worlds. The guys like, you know, in Jon Stewart levels of fame. But like, but the difference between Hassan and Jon Stewart is that when you're watching Jon Stewart, you wouldn't be able to talk to him. You wouldn't be able to send him a message that most likely is intended to piss him off, because that's the most the majority of people in Hassan's chat. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, they love to stun lock him.
Yeah, they love to stun lock him and make him and make him mauled. So I think that I love that aspect of, about Twitch and Twitch streaming. However, there's absolutely now more than ever a massive responsibility both on the streamers and, you know, another shout out to mods, because the mods are the ones who are keeping chat safe for most of the time. Like, we just got about I'd say 300 or 400 accounts just, you know, all of a sudden all flash joining me while I was talking to you, all with these names that clearly show that they're part of Nick Fuentes, Groiper kind of associated. And, you know, if it wasn't for mods all of a sudden just furiously ban accounts, right, then while I was talking to you, I would have been this entire conversation just distracted with all my chat flashing with all this kind of, like, you know, glory to Russia stuff flowing that was happening. So the mods are really important as well. And there's obviously a huge amount of responsibility on the streamer if you're going to talk about issues that are of this kind of seriousness. And this doesn't just apply to Ukraine. I mean, if you're going to talk about issues related to trans kids and the war on trans kids in both the United States and other countries abroad, there's responsibility on you to educate yourself on that topic, so that if you are going to advocate about it, you can give people who are watching you, I guess, the best possible messaging and ammo for themselves to take and then be able to, you know, argue with their family who might be a little bit transphobic but not be aware of it, or whatever the case may be. So the responsibility is high, and I think all anyone can really be is transparent at this point. Just be like, I'm not a journalist. I am an entertainer, and I am an opinion piece. I am slanted. I am biased. Here are my biases. I'm very left leaning. I'm obviously going to give you the news from that, but I don't intentionally lie. Like, I'm not intentionally here to Alex Jones you into buying my soy pills. I'm here to entertain you, and I'll hopefully correct myself when I get it wrong, and that would probably be the difference.
Yeah. Just one quick follow up on that, because I'm curious about this. Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, you are talking from a place of, you know, clearly like the best of intentions and things like that.
But that doesn't matter.
News media,
right? Like, exactly. Good intentions don't matter anymore.
Yeah, and so, like, if we're talking about more traditional news media, you know, there are systems in place to at least incentivize telling the truth, right? Like, there are direct consequences for when you mess up, both from without and within. And I think that, like, at least from the outside looking in, for streamers, those consequences are at least a lot more informal. And so, do you think that on the platform you have, or like any given streamer has incentives to remain, to adhere to what you're saying here, to like be open about your biases and to like correct yourself when you mess up? Or do you think it's just like, you know, kind of person to person, whatever they decide to do, that's what they end up doing?
Well, I mean, outside of the TOS, outside of Twitch actually cracking down on you, the only accountability really comes from either your viewers, who could just suddenly decide, I hate the fact that Lance has gone from talking about lefty stuff to wanting to sell us all this Brain Force Plus, so I'm not going to watch him anymore. So they just leave you en masse, right? Or other streamers calling you out is the other one, right? Because suddenly it'll be a big drama cycle where someone else is like, hey, by the way, you lied about this and you were factually incorrect and you won't correct yourself. I'm going to put you on blast. That's kind of the closest thing to accountability that comes to streamers in this avenue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because on one hand, it's accountability from your peers. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I do think that means something. I think that people often respond to their peers calling them out, at least in some way, shape or form. But I also think that, like, you know, for better or worse, often for worse, drama is one of the currencies of the internet.
Yeah.
And like, drama can often be good for people. It can be good for their public profile, meaning that it can also be an incentive to make a mistake or to behave disingenuously. I mean, I think we see this a lot in kind of, you know, in terms of like political influencers and stuff. Like, I mean, a lot of, you know,
yeah,
a lot of politics influencers behave pretty purposefully in bad faith.
Are you going to list names? Are we going to hash this out? I'm totally joking. But I agree with you. There are people who, I guess, utilize the currency of it almost exclusively without trying to worry about so much the consequences. But hopefully they're identified for what they are. If all you do is intentionally manufacture or artificially manufacture drama for views without any substance behind it, then I hope people identify that kind of a show or streamer for what they are. Not someone who's actually interested in talking about the news, but is interested in generating controversy through talking about the news. And there should probably be a distinction between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, again, it feels like it comes down to kind of, you know, the actions and perceptions of, again, A, your peers, so other people who are using the platform to broadcast, and then B, audiences. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's another example of kind of, you know, the ways that I think modern social media have kind of have cut out a lot of middlemen. In some ways for, you know, in some ways that I think help, like they democratize information and stuff like that, but in other ways that mean that accountability is less direct and maybe less consistent. And so, like, you know, is that good? Is that bad? I think those are very simple terms in which to view anything. But I mean, it's certainly like, it is, right?
I think we just need more ego death on a regular basis. We should tell, maybe there should be a requirement at a certain level once you reach like 2,000 live viewers that you have to take like 10 grams of mushrooms and experience just the strongest form of ego death possible, and then come back refreshed and being like, I am but, you know, an atom in our collective experience or something like that.
Yeah, no, that should be, yeah, exactly. That should be all mid-sized to large streamers should just like one day come back and be like, I'm just a small grain of sand on the beach that is the universe.
Yeah.
And exactly. You know, someday the ocean will wash me away and nothing will change.
Yeah. And I'd just like to say for the record, please do not take 10 grams of mushrooms, even in Roblox. It most likely will hurt you. You know, harm reduction, use a moderation or whatever. But I just want to throw it out there.
Yeah, no. Probably especially don't do that in Roblox. There are a lot of kids there.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, that seems on like the ideal note to end on. Maybe the best possible one. Honestly, I was just trying to guide the conversation to that point this whole time from the beginning. But yeah, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And yeah, have a good rest of your day. And also, I hope you feel better from COVID and all of that.
I'm getting stronger by the second.
Yeah, go take some lozenges.
Take more. All right. Cheers.
So you've just been listening to an episode of The Surf Times, and if you enjoy it and want to see The Surf Times, you can go to wearesurfs.com or watch the live shows at thesurfs.tv. And also everywhere social media is sold, basically thesurfs.tv, you'll find us there, twitter.com/thesurfstv, for example. It would also help us out tremendously if you could leave a good review of this podcast if you enjoyed it, either on, I don't know, iTunes or wherever you're podcasting. Apparently it does help, and yeah, we hope to see you soon.
To our gods, Xander Corvus and Peyton L. Just, we beseech thee to smite down our enemies. To our monarch, Tom Spiker, we are but your humble court jesters here to amuse you. To our lords, Trevor R., we give thanks for this spit of land for us to eke out this meager existence. To our knights, Merid, Cheryl Alvarez, Ruby Kelly, Ellie Leslie, Alex P., Brandon, Words Greenwood, Nate, that one guy, Hagbird Celine, Matthew Scarborough, Stellar Vision, Ariane McCarthy, Daniel Sutton, Coulter Smith, Val 9000, Jenna Tall, Quiet 185, Anna Loves Riley, Omni, Riley and Anna, Poodlehawk, The Tim Caucus, Multi Mondi, Trevor Yanis, Lemmy 101, Anthropophojack, Cern 42, Catherine, Radical Maniac, Ramon Acosta, Nkosin, Violent Orchard, Sophie Baby, Political Puppy, Andreas Chiringuito, Zach Christensen, Josh Mickelson, Todd Buckingham, and Todd Lajeunesse. We raise our flag in a veil, and we salute you, our friends.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.